Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. I am your host, Spencer Wilson. On the board, as per usual, my sidekick, Mr. Sean Cloud.
How are we doing?
Oh, man, it's a beautiful Friday out there, man. It's a little windy. A little cold, but not like what we've been getting, especially not towards like the beginning of the week.
No, you know, the mornings are really nice. It's really nice and sunny. It's the afternoons that are not pleasant.
Yeah, it gets a little rough as you get further into the afternoon.
Last night was a bit chippy with the wind.
Yeah.
I could feel it.
Not thrilled either how the first off, love the people over there at Channel 4 in the morning news, but they've been reminding us all this week that daylight saving times reverts on Sunday.
Now, is it spring forward or spring back?
Spring forward. You fall back and then you spring forward. So we, as soon as 1:59 a.m. strikes on Sunday, just know you're about to lose the entire 2 a.m. hour.
They're going to work early.
Yeah, man. I'm gonna lose an hour. That's gonna be a lot of fun. Not looking forward to it. Not looking forward to that at all. I do enjoy more of the light, but not losing an hour. That I'm not a fan of.
Yeah, I just believe we get rid of it one way or another, honestly.
Yeah.
It's not worth having.
And Hawaii and Arizona know what they're doing. They don't do this stuff. Let's just get with the times here. But either way, let's jump into it. We will have a head coach of the 1868 FC, Mr. Ian Russell, will join us in studio in the next segment. We'll talk some NHL, NBA, and then some other sporting news there towards the end of the show. We'll start where we always do with the Nevada men's basketball team, who had a bit of a tough start to the week. They lost at Utah State, and then, of course, the incidents after the game with the court storming and having to hold Jordan Caroline back, all of that's all seemed to now kind of bubble and fizzle away from everything, but it was unfortunate when it happened.
It's pretty incredible how fast and how wrong everyone's interpretation of things comes out to be, you know, because it was this thing, it was that thing. No one was really willing to wait to see what was happening. And to this day, we may never know exactly what happened that day.
Well, I can tell you, watching the end of the game on TV, as soon as the buzzer went off and fans started to storm the court, I remember seeing two or three people running towards the Nevada bench. But my thought process was, obviously there's going to be some kind of security or assistant coaches that step in and just kind of shove the kids away, like, hey, stay away from our players. Not sure what the security setup is at those kind of games.
They have a couple of, I'm going to call them kids because that's what they are, but they kind of, they have like a rope that they are supposed to run down.
Yeah, I don't think you're never going to have time to do that when people start storming the court. But either way, I feel like there's got to be some kind of change to it. They've been talking about taking court stormings away, and I understand why you wouldn't want to do that, because it's a part of, you know, the atmosphere of college sports, especially college basketball. You can storm the field in college football, but when you can empty out the stands like that and just get onto the court and celebrate with your team after a buzzer beater or a big win, I get that that's part of the culture, but when you get people that cross the line like this and cause these kind of reactions from players, it's just not healthy for anybody. It's not healthy for Nevada players. It's not healthy for Utah State players to have to face that backlash of their fans. It's not healthy for their fans to be putting themselves in that kind of situation. It's just not great. So I don't want to – it would be sad to kind of see that element taken away, but if there's no real way to make it safer, I think the only thing you got to do is take it away.
Yeah, I agree. I believe it's one of those things that we don't necessarily need anymore. We don't need to have running or rushing of the courts, you know, the potential of someone getting hurt from that. You already get to, you know, I think it was at that game, the student section had cards written out of like the most terrible things about all of our players.
Oh, really?
So it's kind
of hear that.
Yeah, they already had that. And that's kind of why you have student sections, is to get into the opponent's
totally
head. Just the fact that I thought it was pretty clever, honestly.
But yeah.
You already have that. You already have all these things. So storming the court isn't your needed. Plus, I mean, at the end of that, if you watch, since you were watching on TV, you probably saw one of our players' head almost get cut off by that rope.
Anytime storming of the court happens, it's always a chaotic scene. And it's just tough to try and justify that. And also, but to your point, though, you're there as a fan to have fun with your fellow students. Celebrate with them. I appreciate wanting to celebrate with the team, but you're there with other fans to celebrate with those fans, especially in the student section. You know you're all there to support the same team. So I would say just enjoy that. and go along with it. But Jordan Caroline did manage to break the 2,000 port mark for his career in this game. Very big accomplishment for any player, so congratulations to him. He has had a great year this year, as has really this whole team, even in their losses. You know, this wasn't a bad loss for this team. Utah State is the other top team in this conference, and even if they don't go on to win the conference tournament, because obviously we believe Nevada will, I still believe they are a tournament-bound team.
They have a great resume
to put them there. So take nothing away from him, take nothing away from this loss. And then Caleb Martin leading the way with 23 points, been on a path of destruction lately with his fourth 20-point game, fourth consecutive 20-point game, eighth time in the last nine games he's been able to do that. And then Trayshawn Thurman scored 21 and Cody Martin scored 16. But the stat that really stood out to me to this game, it was funny, we talked about kind of the depth of Nevada last year towards the – not – last year's and last season, but in the end of 2018, towards the beginning of this season, we talked about how they're not known for a lot of depth, but their bench had kind of come alive this year. Utah State's bench outscored Nevada's bench 29-8 in that game. And that's, again, it hasn't necessarily been a vocal point for this team in the past, but when you get outscored by 21 points from bench to bench, it's going to be tough for anybody to hold their head up in that. When you have five guys, practically your starters, going up against an entire team, they're going to need more help. So that's the stat that really stood out to me in that loss.
The stat that stood out to me was the field goals and the three-pointers. So in the first half, they were 13 of 36 for their field goals. That's not a good stat to
have. That's not great.
In the first half, they were 3 of 12 for their three-pointers. And in the second half, they were 3 for 11. So those are the stats that really bring it to me, that like you're not making shots, something else is going on, something's throwing the rhythm off. But we also knew that Trey Porter and Jordan Caroline were a little bit under the weather that day too.
That's true.
A last minute like kind of thing that came in, and we're like, oh, you know, we're not really feeling well. So that, and you could see it kind of have that presentation. Caroline still played, I think, a good 30 minutes.
Oh yeah, they all still put in really solid minutes in this game. They had to.
36 minutes and 7 points. You were under the weather. You still stuck it out to be in there. But at that point, if you have a person who's doing that bad, or not bad, but just not performing, maybe make some changes, which they tried to do, but it wasn't kicking in for anyone.
Yeah, but what's become another staple for an Eric Musselman coach Nevada team, they are quick to bounce back after losses. Going up against Air Force in Colorado Springs this past Tuesday, Jazz Johnson leading the way in that game with 27 points, the only Pac player in the 20-point range, as the Martin twins had 18 and 16 points respectively. And then I mentioned that bench score from the Utah State game because Nevada entirely flipped the script against Air Force, outscoring their bench 27-7 in this game. And again, that inconsistency, like you said, on the road, in another environment, trying to get pieces that match up when guys aren't feeling under the weather, it's tough. But when you see them then produce like that, you understand the full firepower of this team. And on the road, in a true road game, it becomes a lot tougher. But at the home game or on a neutral site game, I feel like this team is going to have the edge over anybody in the Mountain West Conference.
I 100% agree with that. I agree that we're going to have that advantage over on neutral sides. That's what I was saying. Like, it's one thing if you can win on the road, but if you can win in a neutral setting, game on.
And now we have arrived at the final regular season game for the men's team, going down tomorrow night. You can catch that, of course, right here on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. I believe tip is at 7, so Mr. Ramey will have your pregame at 6:30. And Nevada looking for a little bit of redemption. San Diego State, one of the losses on the Wolfpack's ledger, 65-57 when they were down in Southern California. So not only can Nevada avenge that loss, but should they win this game tomorrow night, they'll be 15-3 in conference. And right now, Utah State is 15-3 in conference with no more games to play this regular season. So that would leave them tied at the top of the conference. So how do we break that tie to determine top seed? Well, first tiebreaker would be head-to-head records. They both won on their home court this year, so that doesn't solve anything. The next thing you would do is you'd look at the best ranked team in the conference and how these teams fared against that team. So in this case, that would be Fresno State, who is currently third place in the Mountain West. Utah State split with Fresno, 1-1 this year. Nevada swept them. So there you go. Should Nevada win tomorrow night against San Diego State, they will finish 15-3 in conference and get the number one seed in the Mountain West tournament. Should they not lose, they will be number two seed behind Utah State. So there you go. Cut and dry.
What do you think they need to win this game?
Get out. Get out fast. Let that – the crowd's going to be amped up. It's senior night, which is going to put even more of an energy in that crowd. Crowds that have been massive this year.
Sold out almost every game.
Yeah, average attendance this year, I would be – I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would be shocked if the average attendance this year wasn't up close to top all time for this program. So you know that crowd's going to be jacked up. You know they're going to want to see a big win. So I think you get out fast. The first 5 minutes of this game, press – and just pummel San Diego State. Try to get as big of a lead as you can and try to get this crowd energized. Because if you can do that, this crowd will be there all 40 minutes. So if you can do that, get out of the gates fast, allow Jordan Caroline to get in close, banging the bodies down low, see if you're hitting outside. I would say take a few outside shots. If you're not hitting them, pound it, make them stop you down there. Just try to get as much energy in your team and in this crowd as you can in those first 5 or so minutes, and then just let everything pretty much take care of itself. That's where I would go with that.
I agree. Take it, if you don't hit your first three threes, stay away from the threes for a couple minutes. Just drive it in, do some power layups, whatever you have to do, but stay away from those threes, and pass the ball around.
Yeah,
just keep
ball
it going.
Movement. Yep. Now let's talk about women's basketball, who has wrapped up their regular season, finishing on a 1-2 stretch. First at home against Utah State, they came up short 59-71, but the Pack played the Aggies evenly throughout the second half. Unfortunately, a little bit slow coming out of the gates, trailed 35-24 in the first half, and just wasn't able to close the gap, but still a very respectable showing there. After that, though, the Women's Wolfpack came back home for their senior night to honor Jade Redmond, Trey Briggs, Kristen Dirth, and Delaney Gross, winning 79-54 over Air Force. The Pack shot a high 58% from beyond the arc and went into halftime shooting 60% from the field, which is great numbers. And really, it's the kind of offensive output we've seen from this team. It's just been iffy on kind of the rhythm of it. I mean, I feel like they're a very rhythmic team. When their offense gets running, they get up and down the floor, they play their game, they feel good. When they got girls missing shots and committing fouls and turnovers and they can't get any rhythm going, it just makes it tougher for them. But the Pack defense did hold the Falcons to 26% from the field and just 7% in the second quarter. We've talked about that defense this team has possessed all season this year, and when it's on, it's extremely deadly. But then the Pack lost a close season finale at San Diego State, falling to the Aztecs 61-64. Trey Briggs led the way with 28 points. Jade Redmond added 12 to the tally. Nevada trailed by 12 at the half, but then outscored San Diego State 35-26 in the second half. They had a run. I think they were down 14 at one point and made a run to close it back to about 5. And they were just kind of fluctuating back and forth into that window. But they made it a really good game there at the end. And then the women will play San Jose State on Sunday. That'll be on our sister station, 94.1 FM, at 2 p.m. for the first round of the Women's Mountain West Tournament. Nevada only played San Jose State once this year, and that was 2 months ago tomorrow, January 9th, where Nevada won 52-49. So there you go. They got some good momentum going into that game. Men's golf off to a bit of a downer start, losing their official season opener to SMU 5-1. This is Nevada's only match play event of the season. Joey Virch, the only player to win, beating SMU's Ben Wong in their head-to-head matchup. Next for the Pack, they will play this Monday and Tuesday in San Fran at the Olympic Club for the Olympic Club Intercollegiate Competition. Sounds very fancy.
Yeah.
I believe that location has hosted a U.S. Open as well. Don't quote me on that, but I feel like I've seen it on posters before. However,
I have no idea.
Professional, that sounds.
Be honest,
too.
I have no clue.
Either way, women's golf finished 6th out of 11 teams at the Gunrock Invitational in Sacramento this past Monday and Tuesday. Pack had a final round combined score of 304, leaving them 35 over par for the event. But freshman Victoria Gailey had an even par of 72 in her last round to help elevate the team. Next for the Pack, they'll be in Fairfax, California, March 17th to the 19th for the Meadow Club Collegiate Competition. The men's tennis team will be in Davis, California today and tomorrow for the Golden State Invitational. This morning, they face St. Mary's College. This afternoon, they will play UC Davis or New Mexico State, whoever won or lost, depending on Nevada's result, in their opener, followed by one more match tomorrow still to be determined. Women's tennis off this week. They will be back in action next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in Santa Cruz, San Francisco, and Stockton, respectively. Swim and dive still preparing to go into battle at the NCAA Zone E Championships in Flagstaff, Arizona, starting this Monday the 11th and going through Wednesday the 13th. The rifle team go on their way to the NCAA Championships happening today and tomorrow. The Pack have sent two competitors, senior Mitchell Van Patten and freshman Alec Patajo. This makes now 9 individuals the Pack has sent to the championship in their program's history. We'll see how those guys can do.
And do remember that this is the last for the rifle team.
That's right.
At Nevada.
So stay up to date. You can follow those live stats on Wolfpack's athletic site. Support the rifle team in their final NCAA championship. As of right now, could make a comeback, we don't know, but as of right now, this is the final event for this program. And then since 2012, Nevada will have a representative at the NCAA Indoor Track and Field Championships, as sophomore Nicola Otter will compete in the high jump at the event, an event she has not lost this year when entered in it, including winning the conference championship event 2 weeks ago with a jump of 6 feet.
Wow.
Which I believe tied a school record in that jump. I believe it also was her 4th personal best this year. She's just been on fire in that event. And then, of course, baseball getting ready for a first look at league play this weekend as the 7-4 Pack will be in San Diego. Man, it's just an Aztec-filled weekend for Nevada. My goodness. They'll be in San Diego facing off against the Aztecs for a 3-game series, coming off their 1-2 series loss to Washington State, and then unfortunately dropping a game to Grand Canyon University 2-3, where GCU scored a run in the 8th to tie the game and then the 9th to win it. You were on that game, Sean.
It was a tough game. You know, we were up 2-1 for most of the game. And then the 8th and 9th inning, we kind of just fell apart. Our pitching wasn't there, whether we got tired, whatever it was. Our relief pitching just did not really help in the cause. And, I mean, we swung the bats pretty well. I think they left like 11 people. We left 11 people on base. So we just couldn't get them in. There was some cool Dylan Strum had a home run.
Yep.
And then Hatton had a steal on error because it was a wild pitch to third, I believe.
Okay.
One of the two. Yeah, because he ran from. Yeah, so he ran around the bases to home. I just can't remember what base he started on.
Either way, he stole bases on an error of a wild pitch.
Yeah.
To home. Okay.
Yeah, no, it was a wild pitch. I think they threw it to second and went over second.
Oh,
he ran
gotcha.
To third, then he ran home.
Okay.
So Hatton got home on error.
Gotcha.
So that was their two runs, you know, a home run and then a run on error. That's not the best looking you could do, but, I mean, they held it out, and all I just remember thinking going into the 9th tied 2-2, I was like, oh, my God. I want the Pack to win, get a hit, and then hold them, but it just didn't work in our favor, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, but they'll have a chance with 3 games against the Aztecs to start off on a strong foot for league play. And the softball team, last but not least, also had a great showing last weekend, going 3-1 in 4 tournament games. First beating Northwestern State 6-3, followed by their only loss to Arkansas 6-9. But they rebounded from that to beat Nebraska at Omaha 8-0, and then beat Northwestern State again 4-3 before their finale against Boston got canceled. But next for the softball team, they will be in the Bay Area for the Silicon Valley Classic, where they will play Cal State Fullerton, then Cal State Northridge today, followed by Northern Kentucky and UC Davis tomorrow. Then they'll have a doubleheader against St. Mary's on Sunday. So a busy weekend for softball and really a busy time for pack sports in general, but that just makes it more fun for us here in Reno.
Yeah, it's the transition month. We have so much going on. It's just almost hard to compute what you want to watch, what you want to listen to, whether it's men's basketball, which is what everyone should be listening to. the baseball team, they're doing very well. And like you said, going into conference play, this is the time to start listening.
And if you were looking to catch the Nevada baseball game this Sunday, like we mentioned, the women's basketball game, because that is going into the postseason, they will be on our sister station, 94.1 FM. But you can still catch the Nevada baseball game on the internet broadcast, so you will get to hear it if you'd like to. So there you go. And speaking like Sean said, a lot of stuff going on right now. The Reno 1868 FC season starts tomorrow night. So we have head coach Ian Russell in the studio with us after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the show. Very happy now to be joined by Reno 1868 FC head coach, Mr. Ian Russell. Coach, thank you very much for joining me today. I appreciate it. And before we jump into what's kind of coming up this season, just want to get your thoughts first on what it was like topping the MLS affiliates, San Jose Earthquake 3-0 in preseason this year.
Yeah, it was a good game for us. It was tough on them. They came from Cancun. They were there for 3 weeks for preseason, so they flew from 90-degree weather to Reno where it was 30 degrees and altitude. So, but I thought we played well and kind of caught them off guard a little bit.
And speaking to them coming to Reno to play you guys, when you get new guys coming into Reno, do you tell them that, you know, the start of our season could be a little wetter than you're used to in March and April just to kind of get them in that mindset?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously the last 2 years, last year our home opener was snowy and cold. So, you know, the first couple months are a bit challenging here, but I think this weekend looks good.
Yeah, it's supposed to be 49 and partly cloudy, which is a little nicer than the blizzard.
Excellent. Yep.
Which you guys had to open up with last year. And speaking of that game you opened up with against Swope Park, you now get to open up against Orange County SC, a team that you guys played super tight last year, met in the playoffs. And just curious, is this kind of a revenge game mentality, or is it just too early to be in that kind of a mindset?
Yeah, I think it's a bit too early. I think with USL, with a lot of these teams, there's a lot of turnover every year. So we do have some core group coming back that did face them in the playoffs, but I look at it as a brand new season. Just want to get off to a good start and have a good year.
And one of those new guys is Corey Herzog, who just makes this offense even more explosive than it already was. How do you get acclimated to your system? Is it more one-on-one meetings with them, or is it more just kind of on the pitch as a team? They get used to each other. How does that go?
Yeah, kind of both. Corey came a little bit late into preseason because he was a late signing, but he's a player, he's a striker that's used to playing with another pairing. So there's a lot of teams that just play with one forward. We play with two, so he's used to that. He came from St. Louis, and they did the same thing. So getting him acclimated was pretty easy. And he's experienced, so he's jumping right into it.
And then when you have a player, I'm going to use Danny Musovski as an example. When you have a player that comes to you on loan for part of your season, and then you have him kind of officially on your roster, does it change any of the way you interact with them? Or because I don't know, I'm not sure if you get orders down from anybody that you have them on loan, how you want to use them. But is it any kind of a different interaction with those players?
It's a little bit different. With Danny, he was on the Earthquakes roster last year. They didn't end up re-signing him. I liked him, so I tried to get him back here to Reno. And the Earthquakes wanted me to reach out and sign him. So okay. It was a situation where he knew that he was on the cusp of being in MLS. So I think with Danny, he's just got something to prove this year. I expect a lot of goals from him. He's working hard. He's scoring a lot of goals in preseason already.
Does it bother you at all as a coach when you get those kind of orders down from your affiliate? Hey, this is your guy. This is how we want him to kind of be used. Is it irritating at all, or is it just part of the job? Really?
It's part of the job, but it is challenging. You never know, usually until Thursday, who exactly is going to come. So the first couple games can be a challenge. And I think, you know, they're going to work with me. They know that, you know, these guys have been working hard for 6 weeks in preseason. And the good thing is we had an inter-squad game against San Jose on Monday. So we were down there. We used a couple of their players with our team that may be working in with us. So that was good.
Okay. And then again, here talking with 1868 FC head coach Ian Russell. And coach, the world of professional soccer just seems to constantly be expanding here in the U.S. Major League Soccer adding a few teams this year and will continue to do so. And USL also adding a couple teams this year. Austin Bold FC is one of those teams. And that is your second game here at home this season. Earlier in the season or later in the season, does it make a difference when you play a new club, or are those challenges just going to be there regardless of when you play them?
I think you'd rather not open up against a brand new club in their first game because you can't scout them. At least they'll have a game under their belt where I could look at film and possibly get some preseason games that they had. So you'd kind of rather play them a little bit later just so you get an idea how they're going to play. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you do play them right away, then it's challenging, but something that, you know, I still think we would have an advantage having the experience of having a core group coming back.
And then another cool feature that for Reno this year is that you guys will be featured twice in the ESPN's USL Game of the Week in two really high-profile matchups, first at home against Phoenix Rising FC and on the road against Orange County SC. When you get that kind of support from a network like ESPN, what will that do not only for this team but for the USL and as a whole to kind of get a little more national respect and attention?
Yeah, it feels good. I think our team's proven the last couple of years that we play good soccer. We attack, we defend well, we have good players. We've had a lot of guys go into MLS now. So to get that notoriety is special, and I think the guys deserve it.
And then when you get these competitions like the U.S. Cup and you get to tangle with these MLS teams in real, not just preseason competitions, but real competitions, what's kind of the message of the team when you go out there? And because you get this experience now against San Jose in the preseason, but mm-hmm. when you go up against MLS teams you don't get to see every year, is there a change in message to your team, or is it really the same?
Well, it's more of a, I think for them, it's a personal motivation. They're trying to get to MLS, these players on our team. So, you know, they need to come out when they play these MLS teams and play really well to hopefully catch the eye of some of these coaches. And, you know, when we play the Earthquakes, I tell the guys, I don't really even need to do a team talk. Like, I think the motivation is there for you guys. You know what it is. So, those games are always exciting and really good for the players.
And then, as I mentioned, you start your season with two home games against Orange County SC and Austin Bold FC, and both of those games will have promotions going along with them. Koozie Night coming up this Saturday, then St. Patrick's Day celebration for the Austin Bold FC game. And just curious, Coach, do you have any, besides the soccer game, do you have any St. Patrick's Day traditions or anything you do with your family or your teammates or anything like that?
Not really. You know, back in the day, obviously, I used to like to go out and have some fun on St. Patty's Day, but I've toned it down a little bit.
Well, Coach, I appreciate your time. I appreciate you coming in to talk to me. Based on the first two seasons you guys have had, we're all really looking forward to what this team is going to be able to do this year, and we're going to be pulling for you.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Spencer.
Big thanks there to Coach Ian Russell for taking some time to talk to us. With their season opener tomorrow night, it's also koozie night. So there you go. Show up, get a nice koozie.
What's a koozie?
The thing that you like put your beers or your soda in that like holds it, like the rubber thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I always thought that was just for look or something. I didn't know it actually did anything.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, I mean, it helps you not get your hand as cold.
Oh.
And I think it keeps your beverage cold
warm
as well.
I don't know.
Yeah. All right. But either way, but you can show up there, get a koozie, should be a lot of fun. And Orange County SC, a very game opponent for Reno. They've had a lot of close games. 2017, the first year of the 1868, SC beat them in the first matchup 2-0. Reno came back and won 3-1 and then 4-1 in the three meetings there. And last year they had a 2-2 draw, and Reno won 3-1 in the two regular season meetings. But Orange County SC got them 1-0 in the second round of the playoffs. And you heard Coach Ian Russell and I talk a little bit about it there. What mindset are you being? Are you going to be in a kind of a revenge mindset? Are you going to show up to kind of get back at these guys? You heard him say it's a little too early for that. I think it is to really drive that home to your whole team. But I think if you have three or four players to kind of walk up to, just give them a little nudge before the game, like, hey, remember what these guys did in the last season? Just to kind of go out there and a little bit of extra fire to the first game. But I think it should be a lot of fun. Be sure you get out there, support the 1868. They made the playoffs both years in a row, looking for their third straight year, making it 3-for-3. And looking to build on that first playoff win last year. Should be a lot of fun.
Should be great.
Of course, the Aces also right around the corner here, a couple weeks away from the Aces getting going again, like we said, which also means we talked about daylight saving time at the beginning of the show. But that means that spring is right around the corner. Rejoice.
No more snow. Come on. I'm done. There are some like ski resorts that are saying they're staying open until July now, which is crazy.
Didn't Mount Rose stay open until like July 6th or something like that? Every resort in the Tahoe area is going to be staying open for a while with all the snow they've gotten up there. A lot of fun. Speaking of snow, we'll talk about a little ice, the ice in the NHL. We'll talk about that in the NBA after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. A lot of movement going on the ice right now. Hockey races heating up, especially at the top of the two Western Conference divisions. Let's talk a little about the East, though, before we get to that, because Pittsburgh went from being the first team out of the East to being the last of three automatic qualifiers from the Metropolitan Division. going 3-0-1 this past week, so in four games, one winning three, just losing one in overtime, and that was their first game of the week, losing 4-3 to Buffalo at home in overtime, kind of showing the struggles that this team has gone through this past stretch, but then really able to turn it around on the road, beating Montreal 5-1 in Montreal, beating Florida 3-2 on the road, and then beating Columbus 3-0, who they'll see again tomorrow, I believe at home. So right now, Pittsburgh shaping up to make another run, currently 4 points behind Washington and the New York Islanders, who are tied up there for the top of the Metropolitan Division at 85 points. Columbus, though, going the complete opposite direction. They were number three. They were holding the spot Pittsburgh currently holds in the division standings, but had a rough week, going 1-3, losing to Edmonton 4-0, then to Winnipeg 5-2, and they were barely able to pull off a shootout win over New Jersey 2-1. And then, of course, like I said, falling to Pittsburgh 3-0. They'll play again tomorrow. Columbus, though, not just falling out of the divisional standings and the wild card standings, they are now the first team out of the East, trailing Montreal by 2 points. So Columbus, who really kind of took it to Washington in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs last year, really showing some fire and heart, especially in the 2019 portion of this hockey season, are now going through a bit of a dry spell and struggling. And currently with Carolina and Montreal ahead of them, mentioned that Montreal suffered some losses this week, but they are still a very well-rounded team. And Carolina is surging right now. They are showing some very smart, intelligent hockey play, plays out there on the ice, doing a great job holding home ice and just holding their own in what is becoming a very competitive Eastern Conference. And of course, not going to talk too much about the Atlantic. Nothing's really changed in that division. Tampa Bay still with a complete stranglehold on him with 106 points. Boston, 91 points in second. Toronto, 87 points in third. But out west is where things are really heating up right now in the division races. We'll start with the Central Division, because Nashville and Winnipeg traded leads of that division this week. Winnipeg jumped ahead of Nashville by a point for a day or two before Nashville retook that back. The Preds on a current two-game winning streak with back-to-back wins over Minnesota, a team that's been struggling as of recently in the Western Conference. Winnipeg losing their last game and are currently 4-5-1 in their last 10 games. So neither team showing a lot of promise of pulling away from one another. I feel like this is going to be a divisional battle that goes all the way through to the end, especially with the fact they have one more meeting coming on March 23rd in Winnipeg. And they had pretty much all three games this year have been really competitive, and really there's been almost like a rivalry undertone to it. Not that this is necessarily a big rivalry in the Central Division, but when you have two teams that have been towards the top for pretty much the majority of the season, when you get closer to the end like this, I feel there's always going to be a little bit more of a rivalry feel. And I feel like that game on March 23rd could go and just solve it. It could dictate who's going to be first and who's going to be second. And obviously, with St. Louis currently in the third spot in that division, and they are quickly closing the gap, only 4 points back of Winnipeg, that would not be a team you would necessarily want to run into in the first round. And whoever finishes second is going to have to do that. So it's going to be very tight between these two teams going down to it. But to me, I just feel like Nashville overall as a team is going to hold the edge and will eventually win that division. But of course, time will tell. And then the Pacific Division, which had an interesting scenario play out this week, because Calgary was pulling away from the rest of this division. They had a 7-point lead on San Jose, up 89 points to 82 points when we went off the air last week. As I am talking to you now, Calgary still has 89 points. They did not win a game this past week, and San Jose is within a point. So the Flames on a 4-game losing streak after putting 6 wins together. That's the crazy thing. This team went on a 6-game winning streak, and they just dropped 4 in a row. And it wasn't like they were, I mean, they were tough games, but they were winnable games for this team. And it's just aren't that's not the kind of play you can have, especially when San Jose is surging towards you right now, winning their games. And they beat three good teams. Well, I mean, Chicago's been iffy throughout the year, so give or take that game. But Colorado and Montreal are solid wins for this Sharks team right now. And with that game and with Chicago and Montreal, they had back-to-back five-goal performances in that game. So that's making a statement when you play two teams that could be in the playoffs with, well, not Chicago, but Colorado and Montreal, and you put those kind of performances up. It's going to be really interesting to see how that shapes out. They also have one more meeting left this season in San Jose on March 31st. It'll be one of the last four or five games, within the last four or five games for both of these teams. So that could also go a long way in deciding who will get the division championship and play a wild card team, and who will most likely have to play Vegas in the first round. And Vegas did knock out San Jose in six games last year in the second round of the playoffs. So divisional races just heating up all over the place. Let's talk about the NBA as well, because the Houston Rockets, currently taking control of their own destiny in the Western Conference. They moved up to fourth place in that division, 7-3 in their last 10 games, and on a six-game winning streak. And mostly because Chris Paul has finally gotten back into form, looking like his old self again. And that's going to make the only thing that's going to make this team is better. When you have Chris Paul that can then do his damage and just get all of his assists and dish it out to Harden. That's going to be a tough team to beat. Those three losses, respectable. I mean, the Thunder, currently third place in the West, so I get that. Timberwolves, up and down team. They're on the road at Minnesota. Never really know what you're going to get there, but still a 10-point loss. Not the worst thing on the road. The loss at the Lakers, they've been struggling. They haven't looked great. They've fallen out of playoff contention, really, the last 2 weeks or so. So I'm not thrilled to see that loss on Houston's ledger as of right now. But they've had solid wins in this stretch as well. The win over the Mavs. They beat the Warriors 118-112. Win over the Hawks, Hornets, and Heat. And then beating the Celtics and the Raptors. And I know the Celtics have been kind of trickling down the Eastern Conference standings, but I still think they're one of the solid, best overall teams in the Eastern Conference, and regardless of where they finish, I feel like they can make a run on the East side. And then beating the Raptors 107-95, Toronto, I believe, in second place right now in the East. So they, again, getting some good wins in this stretch over possible finals-bound teams. So good to see that as well. Their next game also today against the 76ers, the second of two matchups this year between those teams. Philly did win the first meeting 121-93. But again, I believe that was without Chris Paul on the floor. So we'll see what kind of change that can induce in this Rockets team. And I can imagine that James Harden isn't going to want to lose to a brash and cocky Philadelphia team twice this year. So it should be a lot of fun. See how that shakes out. Coming down the home stretch of both of these seasons, about a month left in the NBA and NHL season, and it's going to be really exciting to see how it all shakes out. Going to be fun. But of course, not the only thing happening this weekend. When we come back, we'll talk about IndyCar getting underway this Sunday in St. Petersburg. The UFC is back with an event, and some changes coming to the game of baseball. We'll talk about that on the Spencer Wilson Show after the break here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Open wheel racing just about back on TV with the return of IndyCar this Sunday with the St. Petersburg's Grand Prix. The defending champion of that race, Sebastian Bourdais. So we will see how that shapes up, how that goes. Usually a fun and exciting race. It's a fun atmosphere. Usually you get good weather, so you don't have to worry about any kind of rain delay or race delay, which is nice. And usually gives you some exciting finishes. Not always the front of the field, but throughout the field when drivers are battling for points and positions, even in the first race, it'll give you something exciting to watch. And then, of course, Scott Dixon, the defending champion, the five-time IndyCar champion, coming back to defend his championship. We'll see what he can do. Also, some slight schedule changes on the IndyCar season this year. They won't be going to Phoenix like they have been the past couple years. They're going to, I believe it's Monterey to end their season this time instead of Sonoma, which is usually where they end their season. So we'll see kind of what those changes bring, how they shape up the IndyCar Championship season. Then, of course, Formula One a week away from being back next Thursday, the 14th, the official Melbourne Grand Prix weekend begins. I guess the Australian Grand Prix weekend. It's in Melbourne, Australia, though. That begins with the practice sessions on Thursday. Exciting to see open wheel racing back. You enjoy open wheel racing, Sean?
I enjoy any type of racing that has crashes involved.
All right, well, there you go.
Like that big crash that happened a couple weeks ago. That was great.
At Daytona?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, you always get a good crash at a restrictor plate race when it comes to NASCAR. To Daytona and Talladega, tune in for your or short track racing, too, if they go to Bristol or Martinsville. Always fun there. But then UFC returning to action after their pay-per-view last weekend, which was a bit of a mixed bag. UFC 235 between John Jones and Anthony Smith. I thought the first fight of the main card, I can't remember the names now, but I thought the first fight was just, I mean, it was basically 5 minutes of fury. It ended with about 3 seconds to go in the first round, but guys just laying into each other was really, really exciting. The women's fight on after that went the distance, but still very entertaining. Then you kind of got to the mixed bag portion of the night. Ben Askren, we mentioned him last week, the big UFC signing from ONE Championship in Asia that was coming over to make his UFC debut. There was a lot of hype around that, especially going up against a defending welterweight, or not a defending, but a former UFC welterweight champion in Robbie Lawler. And it looked like Lawler was going to end it early. The whole body slam where Askren landed on part of his head, knocked him for a loop for a little bit, getting pounded. And he was able to fight back, and he got him. He didn't get him in like a choke. He wasn't under his chin. It was more of just like a head squeeze. He was kind of right along the jaw and squeezing. And I, as well as Joe Rogan, one of the commentators, and the referee, Herb Dean, who was officiating the fight, all three of us, not that we were talking about it later, but all three of us did think that Lawler was out because his arm does look like it goes limp. So Rogan, I think, called he was out. I, myself at home, was like, oh, it looks like he's out. Herb Dean kind of shakes his arm to try and see if he's there, and it looks like he lifts it. And then he drops it again, and it becomes limp again, is what it looks like. So, obviously, Herb Dean sees that, stops the fight, declares Askren the winner. But as he says, Lawler just pops right back up, as if he wasn't fazed at all. And, of course, he starts to complain, but then he just kind of accepts it and, you know, pats Herb Dean on the shoulder and just kind of walks away. But I think it'll be an ending forever talked about. As with it being, first off, Ben Askren's debut in the UFC, but also, was Lawler ever really out?
He was playing the dead fish game, you know, trying to make it seem like you're not there
anymore.
Yeah,
which is a dangerous game to play in the UFC, but they asked Askren if he would have a rematch against Lawler, and he said absolutely not. If you saw the interview with Askren after the fight, he didn't win any fans when he told, and he said on the mic, "Dana, is that the best you've got?" End quote. The fans didn't like it because, again, it's a controversial ending. But I guess fighters are going to be fighters, so whatever you make of that. But the UFC returning this weekend with Fight Night Lewis versus Dos Santos. Derek Lewis, who is 3-2 in his last five fights, going up against Junior Dos Santos, also 3-2 in his last five fights. And within those five fights for both men, they've both lost UFC heavyweight championship fights. For Derek Lewis, it's his most recent fight when he lost to Daniel Cormier. Junior Dos Santos, I believe it was three fights ago where he lost to Stipe Miocic. And then Eliseu Zaleski Dos Santos, who is 5-0 in his last five fights, goes up against Curtis Melender, who is also 5-0 in his last five fights in the co-main event. And then real quick, Sean brought this up before we went on air today. The Atlantic Baseball League making some... I guess we can call it radical changes.
It's pretty radical.
To the way they play baseball. But real quick, Sean, kind of inform the people what changes the Atlantic Baseball League has chosen to make for this season.
So we have using a TrackMan radar system to help umpires call balls and strikes. We both didn't like this because we like the human error aspect of the game.
It's all part of the game with human error.
This is the biggest one that I hate. Extending the distance between the pitching rubber from 60 feet and 6 inches to 62 feet and 6 inches, which is a change that hasn't happened ever. I mean, this has been the standard at 60 inches or 60 feet since 1893. So the fact that they even want to make that change kind of hurts my feelings. Mandating that two infielders are on
each side.
This one
drives me crazy.
Are on each side of the second base bag when a pitch is released with... And then if you get called for that, the penalty will be a ball.
So essentially, They're taking away shifts in the game of baseball. They're making you have two players on each side of second base. So basically you have to have first and second base in their positions, shortstop and third base in their positions. And if you don't have that, if you choose to shift on a batter, then they basically give your pitcher a ball in the count against him.
Exactly, and it just feels like we're playing Little League baseball again, where no one can steal.
Well, like, and it's I don't like it because it's that's all. I understand putting in pitch clocks. If you want to do that, I can understand that. If you want to do the whole guy on second during the regular season and extra innings to speed the game up, I understand those changes. But these, I don't see how it, excuse me, I don't see how it benefits this game at all. I don't feel like how to, I mean, shifts beat it. I mean, it's so crazy how you wouldn't see this in any other sport. Are they going to take away power plays in hockey? Because it's 5-on-4, all of a sudden that's not first, going to end up penalizing you and keeping the guy. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense why you would take something away from the game that really you can teach against. If you have one guy on the left side of the field, I don't care if he doesn't hit well, if he doesn't hit to the opposite side of the field well. Take a week and teach a pro baseball player how to hit to the opposite side. I know it's not an overnight thing, but
it could be.
It could be, but we're basically giving up on trying to develop another skill for players because for whatever reason, it upsets the game and we don't like it. That drives me crazy. But either way, that's the show. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Yeah, we hope you have a good weekend. We hope you stay safe out there with the weather. Supposed to be fairly nice this weekend. But regardless of where you go, enjoy the outdoors. Enjoy some time with friends and family. And support the Pack and 1868 FC. Peace.